Welcome to The Detail with me, Katie Malua.
And me, Polly Scatigan.
Today, we're honoured to be hosting Imogen Heap. Imogen is the winner of the International Achievement at the Ivor Novello Awards. She's the recipient of 2 Grammys for Engineer of the Year and Best Producer for her work with Taylor Swift. Her brilliant song, Hide and Seek, is part of the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child 2-part play, which Imogen produced and composed the musical score to. Now, we mention these accolades not just to get our listeners excited about hearing Imogen, but to show that she's been at the heart of the music industry for a very long time. But our talk today is going to focus on problem solving, because Imogen doesn't just create great works of art, but she's someone who builds and innovates within our field. All it seems to make the life of the musician better and easier.
If you enjoy listening to this podcast, it's been lovingly made by me and Katie. The editing, however, has been done by me, Polly Scattergood, in my studio at home. So if you're a fan of this podcast and you'd like to hear more, receive additional content and the odd special treat sent directly from me to you, please head on over to my Patreon page to show your support. The address is patreon.com/Polly Scattergood. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome, Imogen. There are some people who seem to get dejected by problems, and there are those who go around the problem. And then there's someone like you who says, this is a problem that needs to be solved and I'm going to create something to solve it. It's not just for me, but for anyone else that comes across this issue in the future. There's the Mumu gloves, there's Mycelia and Creative Passport. And I just wondered if we could start this chat off just by talking a little bit about Creative Passport and how it will work and what the benefits will be to musicians.
Sure. Hello, Polly and Katie. I'm very happy to be speaking with you. Really love your podcast. So, what is the Creative Passport? Well, as with most of these projects, it comes with frustration, begins with frustration, and then that frustration reaches a point where no return and I must do a thing, otherwise I'm going to explode. So the Creative Passport came from a point a long time ago, 6 years ago, the birth of my daughter. I had a commission for a new song and, you know, motherhood was not what I expected. I just assumed stupidly that I would have a nice, quiet child who'd be sleeping all through the day and I'd have all this time to write music. But that didn't happen. I had literally no time because she was really not in a good way in the beginning. She had colic and she just didn't stop crying and it was really traumatic.
That's
bad. My limit was, you know, really, really small as to what I could cope with. And basically, I just couldn't put up with the annoyances of the music industry at that point. And I'd put up with it for so long and I just didn't have any more bandwidth to put up with it. And I had to release this song and I started to dream of a different music space. I started to imagine, what if life was easier, where we just didn't have so much admin, where the song could contain everything it needs to go and do business with the world, you know, so that we could just put up a song online, how it would have all of its information that it could possibly need to have to go and do business with the world, whether that's who to pay, how to pay them, what the correct credits were, you know, what instruments I used, how you can license it, all that stuff, and that I might be able to then just go off and enjoy the day or write a new song. But as you probably know, that is not the case. So a long journey has led us to the point where we now have a beta app, which musicians can go sign up to do. And really what it does at the moment is it just is a knowledge store for information. So useful information that you might have to copy and paste or write out again or try and find your biography, your press image, you know, numbers that you might have, like an IPN number or your IPN
or
number or your
codes.
ISNI number, all the annoying codes. It could be a place where you want to put which labels or which publishers might kind of have the licenses for your songs and when they run out. It's just basically a top line useful kind of data sheet for yourself that often you need to send to other people. And so at the moment you can put that information in, you can verify yourself as a musician, especially in the UK with linked up with the PPL. And then you can verify yourself with a government ID, like your passport, for example, and link the two so that they know any services in the future might know that you are the official person that you say you are. You're not a bot, and you are the person linked to that creative artist name or music maker name. You don't have to be an artist. You can be a producer, an engineer, or, you know, a mixing engineer, whatever you want to be. So at the moment, that's what it is. It's basically a data store and a way for you to kind of publicly share information about who you are as a creative music maker. And what it wants to be in the future is a one-stop login to all the music services, a place for you to glide through these different services without having to put in your information time and time again, for you to never have to verify who you are again, for you to be able to just have your biography there in various different formats should anyone ever need them, so that you can potentially... people can find you for job opportunities, for collaborations. You'll have all your information up there, which you can do now, but it's not linked. So your skill set, your projects that you're working on, your past works, your inspirations, that could be anything from magazines you read to countries you've been to whatever. You could put your skill sets like, it's, oh, Imogen is into gestural music technology and she has a child and she's in London and maybe she's free on this day. And those exact cross points are the thing that's going to get me a job. So, and the reason I get jobs at the moment is because people know what I do. But for those people out there who haven't had the luxury of 25 years of the music industry and when it, you know, was a bit easier to navigate back in the day, then it worked. I manage. But for every single artist who's, or every single musician who's trying to navigate this music space, they are competing with hundreds of thousands, millions of other musicians. Two songs uploaded every second of every day. Wow. It's just such a lot of music. And how can you possibly be discovered in all of that if you don't have hundreds of thousands of millions of pounds of marketing money to make a hit record? So this is about helping your data do its work for you, for you to get on and be the creative that you are, and to allow yourself to be 24/7 reaching out with all the data that anyone could possibly need about you or your work, to find you when they need it. Because any time somebody can't find something, you lose out, you know, you lose out on the chance. So that's what it is. But we're a long way off from that.
You know, I imagine something like the Creative Passport puts that feeling of trust, because there is, correct me if I'm wrong, there is this blockchain technology in it, and there is this verification that happens through your government ID that I guess lets people know that, yes, this is the best way, you know, these are the managers that work with this artist, and this is the label, and this is the actual agent. Am I right in saying that, in that feeling of trust?
Exactly, that is key. It's how can we... Exactly. Just exhibit, this is really who we are. This is our team. We're totally just legit.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can have faith in this, in this space. I mean, the Creative Passport itself isn't going to be, you know, finding you jobs. It's not the interactive bit. It's not the services bit. It's the base layer that helps services innovate, kind of realizing, oh, wait a minute, there's a gap in the market there where we don't have... somebody who really understands these different areas and kind of knows how to search through the Creative Passport database to be able to curate and come up with that information that somebody might need for a party. So they come up, there could be hundreds, thousands more services than there currently are, because there would be a way to interface with us directly. We would see a plethora of new streaming services, for example, because they would be able to deal with us directly.
Is there a way that, for example, if I was listening to a piece of music and there was somebody, I don't know, playing theremin in Singapore, and I was like, I want that theremin player to be on my record, is there a way then that I could directly reach out to that person or their team? And is that the kind of long-term plan for it to go that way? Yeah. So it's kind of like a LinkedIn for musicians?
Yeah, I mean, it can be however the music maker wants to use it. It wouldn't be like a one-stop solution, one-stop kind of setting for everyone. So for some people, like if you're hugely famous and you're just like, you know what, I literally don't have the time to take any of these requests and you want to just stop them coming in, then you would just not put your information there, or you'd be inaccessible, or you would pass it over to your, you know, manager and just say, look, just however you want to deal with it. But most of the time it works out that when I first started in the industry, you know, I would basically say yes to anything. I'd just be like, yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes, yes. You want me to do this crazy thing for a month? I'm there. but now I'm like, mostly no, because I'm just like, I don't have time. I've got a child. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. I've got all these things and responsibilities and I just don't have the time. So it would be down to the music maker to decide, are they open for that, you know, and who they're open to, what kind of circles they might be open to. I mean, at the moment, it's not that detailed and complex about how you could define your kind of reach or your openness as a way to describe it. But like I said, we're just at the very beginnings. But yes, that's the absolute point, is to be able to feed this information as a beacon of data about how you want to interface with the rest of the world, with your data self, and be able to fluidly change that and update that whenever you feel. So if you're going to go on holiday for 2 months, you could, you know, set it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But if you're really like, you could even maybe get down to the point that, I mean, this is just an example of how an existing service, but I don't imagine, well, who knows? So maybe Spotify, for example. You could imagine somebody's like, you've just heard this amazing musician and you're just like, wow, I've heard it on Spotify. Perhaps even Spotify might be linked up to the Creative Passport in this way, that you could click as a musician or as somebody who's signed up to that bit of Spotify. They could open a new business opportunity for them. So they could be like, okay, if somebody finds a musician through our service, we take a cut. But then the way mm-hmm. that it makes it easy for you as a musician or as a manager, whoever, to find that person by clicking on that on their name in Spotify. It doesn't just have a biography of them. Maybe it has a way through to a contact via the Creative Passport. So you could just go in and book them, you know. it all becomes integrated and seamless. Yeah. So I do absolutely see that as a way forward.
Amazing. And Imogen, we saw an interview that you did with Google, and it was remarkable because you were talking about the Creative Passport and your work at Mycelia. And they were like, well, what can we do to get involved and help? And you very humbly said, well, we're not quite ready yet because we need the artist to sign up to this thing. You know, we need, and that was, I think that was about a year or so ago. So anyone that's listening who feels like they should give this thing a go, I'd really encourage people to, you know, to help and essentially make a more bespoke system, mm. right? You know, this is what we're talking about.
I would like to mention that if anyone is going to do it, it really doesn't do anything at the moment other than just kind of help you organise yourself and help you hopefully visualise a really positive future music space. You have to kind of mm-hmm. put yourself a couple of years from now and you're kind of investing in the belief of this space.
How did you get into this world in the first place? How did you get into music technology?
Well, I've always liked, you know, creating stuff. And at home, we had this lovely grand piano and it also had a pianola in it. So I do wonder if the pianola, which is I know you know what it is, but just for the listeners, it basically has these holes on a roll, a paper roll, and it sits inside the piano in a mechanism, electric or pedal, and it rolls around the key, rolls around the paper, and the notes on the piano the hammers play the sound of the note that it's identifying. God, that's a really terrible example. It's basically coded music on a piece of paper that plays the music with the piano. So it's a really like, it's like MIDI. It's like an early form of MIDI, which is the musical instrument digital interface. There you go. It's a language that music we use in music, digital music. So essentially, that was my first port of call. I was like, oh, this crazy piece of tech. But not knowing it at the time, but that was my intro. And then I had a cassette player, a double cassette player, which I used to record stuff on and just be like, okay, here's a bit of really bad beatbox and here's a bit of piano and there's a bit of voice over the top of that and here's some clapping and some pots and pans and just record on each side to this hissy mess. And then I got a keyboard when I was like 8 or 9 and which, you know, I could make beats on. And then when I was 12, I went to boarding school with my parents split up and discovered this cupboard, and inside the cupboard was an Atari computer and it had this sequencing software on it that nobody seemed to know how to use, but I was very intrigued and read this massive manual. I didn't read it all, but did what I could to just get some sound out of it. And I immediately fell in love with the idea of being able to actually type it in on the keyboard, which I play, you know, quite well. So that was just so nice. And people would come in and hear this weird music, which sounded like, I don't know, some horrible sounding orchestral, you know, sounds, or this sound module that was there. But, you know, long meandering pieces, just because I just loved it. And then it was recording, engineering and recording my voice, moving into tape when I went to the Brit School in Croydon. And that's where I think we were the second year there. So it was still kind of, they were still trying to figure out how to be the Brit School. But I had this great teacher called Gary Hayes, who taught me how to record my voice, or taught us how to record our voices and use the kit and use the desk. And then I got a record deal while I was there, when I was 17. Well, actually, I signed when I was 18, because I met my manager, who became my manager for about 20 years after that. And he heard some demos. And I thought, even though I was there kind of learning about the music industry as well, I was doing a BTEC in music, I can't remember now, but some music. We learned a bit about the industry as it was. And he would follow me around and be like, Imogen, have you got any more demos? And I'd be like, no, go away. Like, I didn't understand that he was the concept of somebody that I didn't know coming and asking me to hear songs was very weird. Uh-huh. And I just thought he fancied me, and I kept running away from him and thinking he was a bit creepy. But eventually I realised, okay, he's serious and he wants to hear some more demos. So I had tons of stuff, like absolutely tons of rubbish songs that I was writing here and there. But one in particular I wrote because I was deeply in love with Gary Hayes. He's my teacher.
The teacher.
The teacher who inspired me. The thing about him was he would come into school wearing this kind of tight lycra cycling outfit. And I just thought that was so cool, because you just didn't see teachers doing that back then. Nobody came in on their bike, you know, especially in lycra. And he was very kind to me. Anyway, I wrote this song about him, which is called Come Here Boy. And that was the one that got me my record deal, once I'd been in the studio with a guy called Nick Kershaw, who's a dear friend. Got myself a terrible record deal. But, you know, we all did on our first record deals.
Yeah, wow. And can we hear that song on the first record?
That's on right,
You can. Fantastic.
Can we talk a little bit about your Mew Mew gloves, the musical gloves that you invented? They are such an incredible invention, and you created them yourself. What was the inspiration behind that?
Thank you. Yeah, it was really, again, another point of frustration, just being on tour. I had tons of equipment that was often quite heavy, like outboard gear, you know, like controllers, basically, devices that I could play software instruments or have a sampler to just record voice. And then I got to a point where I was trying to be, you know, quite fluid on stage, and at different parts of the stage have ways to press record. And do things within the computer, but or on the sampler, but without having to be by it, because I kept like having to race back to base station or be barricaded by a bunch of kit. And so initially I had all these little devices that I could like stamp on a square, on the, like a tile on the floor once, and that would record it, and twice, and that would play. And I had these different, I had a flower with a sensor in it at one point by the piano, so I could record the drums. But it was very time consuming to set up. I had all these wires and they would often break. So the big moment came actually when I saw this, what's he called? Thomas Block. He is a glass harmonica player, and he was playing the wine glasses with his wrists, sorry, with his fingers, but on his wrists were lapel mics. And that's how he was getting the sound. So these little microphones that you stick on your chest or whatever, they have a little fluffy and you can stick them on your wrists. And I'd never seen anyone do that. And that was genius, because what would happen was the sound would come out of his glass in exactly the right point. And his hand would move around with the sound, and so would it was genius. So I was like, that is what I need to do. I need to have microphones on my wrists so I can go up and record anything I need to, like the drums, the violins, whatever, and be able to loop it on stage, or my voice, or the guitar. You know, everything was in the right place because of the drums you could play. You know, the sound would be just there, or the guitar would be by the sound hole. So I was like, this is brilliant. But then I still needed to record it. Anyway, the big aha moment came when I was with somebody who then later worked with me, a lady called Kelly Snook, and she was the resident scientist at NASA scientist at MIT Media Lab. She was sonifying the solar system, as you do. And she was a fan who reached out to me and said, "Hi, Imogen, I'm a fan, and I'd really love to show you around the MIT Media Lab because I think you'd love some stuff there." So I was like, okay. I mean, I was around there at the time. And actually, sorry, before that, she showed us around Goddard Space Center, a NASA Space Center, which was really amazing. And so she'd already, you know, created this great relationship with us and our band who looked around. And then we went to, I went to MIT, and she specifically wanted me to see this this lady called Ellie Jessop, who was developing what's called the VAMP glove. And I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but it was essentially a long, full-length glove, and it had tons of wires on it. And she had a pressure point on her thumb and her index finger. And when she pressed it together to make a kind of OK sign, she would capture that moment in time with a recording. So say she was going, ah, and then the minute she kind of made a clasping action or the OK sign, that nanosecond of audio would be then synthesized into a tone. So it'd be like, ah, and then it would create a sine wave. And then she would wave her arm around like she was vibrato on a string, and it would cause it to oscillate. So it'd be like, ooh. And my mind exploded because I was like, oh my God, this is it. I didn't realize you could do it with your hands, you know. Sorry, I didn't realize you could do it with your hands, be able to control parameters within your computer just by using your hands. I was thinking about my body, like a bodysuit, touching things on my, you know, arms and things, and my chest, kind of buttons. I just never considered the hands because, of course, it's like, you know, you can't see the wood for the trees. So I just begged her. I was like, please, can we make a system together? I've got all these ideas. And she really, really wanted to, but she was committed to the MIT project at the time, which was this amazing opera with Todd Machover, and they just wouldn't allow me to do it. So I was really upset. And I went home just feeling a bit like completely alive with this idea. And I called up the only person I knew who could code. I mean, now I know everyone I know codes, it seems now, but no, I didn't know anyone. And I just said, look, I want to make music with gloves. How can we make it happen? So we got a pair of fiber optic gloves from a company called 5DT, and Tom started to build the neural network for the early, you know, beginnings of Glover, which is our amazing software that connects the gloves to our music programs. So with that, I could create a closed fist, and that would be record. I could open my hand, and that would be play. I could do a one finger point, and that might bring in a certain sound, or a two finger point, and I could bring in another sound. But very quickly, I mean, it took, you know, a few weeks to do that of Tom's time, and it was really cool. And we did a very early TED kind of salon thing, and showed it to the university. And that was that. But very quickly we realized we need movement. You know, we need up, down, left, right. We need accelerometers. We need a way to position for the computer to know where our position is in space so that we can have, you know, access parameters such as up and down, you know, louder, softer, more reverb, less reverb, left and right, that kind of thing. Whereas all we had is an on and an off, basically. And as soon as we had that, then we realised that we need... So we had this a board that we put on top of. We kind of hacked it on with a bit of Velcro and connected these two. And then that was built into the software. And then we wanted a light for feedback so that I could tell if something was in a certain mode, because then we could do much more with that. And I needed to be able to see, double check that it was doing what I wanted it to do without having to look at the computer. And then we got buzzers for feedback, for another type of feedback. And then it looked like this crazy thing, and it was loads of wires, and it was just getting a little bit crazy to put on and off. So then we brought in somebody to integrate everything. And so from that very messy kind of tons of wires with things on my back and things heating up and batteries strapped on here and there, to, you know, fast forward 10 years on, we now have this beautiful integrated glove, which is super lightweight and really, really just so brilliant to play with. There's no latency, there's no delay. So you just, if you're playing the drums, like air drums, it really feels like you're playing the air drums. And there's no, yeah, there's no space between. And then they're really just the only thing that it makes it hard to do in a way is just to not go down wormholes, because you can do so much with them. You can imagine a way to play that you could never have imagined before, and you get lost in the beauty of your human expression. You know, instead of you having to be like on, off, move a fader here and there, be stuck here, all of a sudden you're completely emancipated from those controls, and you are able to be your human expressive self. It is really the first time that I kind of felt what I'd been wanting to feel. It was a really emotional kind of, you know, religious experience or something. It was just to be able to have that freedom, because originally I thought it was about control. I thought I wanted control, but actually what I realized was I needed freedom. I wanted to have freedom to be spontaneous, to be instinctive, and to be free in movement from away from a spot by the technology. So now I can create a whole song. If I have a song in mind, I can sing that song. And I have certain things that I use all the time. Like I have a gestural language basically that's emerged over these years. So I have a posture called secret finger, which is my index finger. And I put it down. So it just kind of, you know, so I bend my finger and my other fingers are up. And then I can pull my arm from my chest out to the top right corner as if I'm kind of going, la, you know, waving my arms in the air. And that would bring in a huge reverb, for example. And then from there, I might want to reverse that reverb and kind of bring me into a new section of a song. So I just close my fist and it reverses everything that I've just done or anything else that's going into the, you know, into the recording of the computer just at that moment. That could be drums, it could be anything. And then I might want to bring in my harmonizer. So I could do that by, I always bring in my harmonizer by just doing a one finger point, and I lift it up from zero, or just point it to a place in the sky. And then that will bring in the level of harmonizer that I would like. And that could be, or it could be a doubler, you know, or it could be a chorus effect. So really, your imagination can run wild, and you can spend a very long time preparing your Glover sessions. But then when you have it, you're able to go back into that space, you know, do improvised performances where, you know, you have these kind of effects on your left hand, these kinds of effects on your right hand. And then you have many different modes, so you can go into different scenes and have different effects on different parts. Or you can, I'm not going to go into detail of what you can and can't do, because now is not the time, but you can do a lot. But actually it sounds quite, maybe it sounds a bit rigid, like one finger point, secret finger, fist. But when you do that, it's very much in the flow of, you know, performance. It's just, it's not a kind of, oh, there she's doing one finger point there. It's like a very small gesture that's just kind of, there it is. But there are bigger gestures, like, you know, the bringing in the reverb, and, oh, it's however you want to choreograph it, I suppose, because You don't have to do it how I do it. You can make up your own postures and decide how you want to do something.
It's amazing, because it's like you've created an instrument which is, you know, which actually looks like magic. And I mean, I remember watching you perform, I think it was at the Barbican Centre quite a few years ago when you had just made this. And it was also just so beautiful to watch, because it's like, you know, your hands are in front of you and they're expressing, and you know, so it's amazing. And I wanted to use the word magic, because in the second part, because we have so much to cover with you, we wanted to extend this talk with you, Imogen, over two parts. My jaw drops at all these really spectacular projects that you do and that you've done. And there's so much innovation and so much beautiful work that you've achieved. Now, I hope I don't ask a question which is too personal or revealing, but I do want to know, what does your diary look like? Because you know, with all these projects, plus I know that you're on the board of many great musical organisations like the FAC, the Featured Artists Coalition. You know, you're the inventor of these gloves. You've composed a soundtrack to the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child two-part play, plus you're a mummy. So I'm just thinking about your calendar. And like, for example, maybe if I can offer mine at the moment looks... So Mondays through to Wednesdays, I try and focus on writing songs. Thursdays, if I can, Thursdays I work on maybe content creation or other things to do with, you know, with the music business, with my management, and then Fridays for other business things and house related stuff. But of course, I mean, that's like the perfect...
Yeah, my diary, I kind of almost got a bit emotional when you mentioned diary just then. I was like, oh my God, don't talk to me about my diary. I feel like I'm on this constant struggle to try and find a pattern, or just as you've described, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I do this, Thursday, I do this, Friday. I just can't seem to ever manage that because there's so many different pieces of different projects, and I just can't do that. Well, first of all, I have a child, so I have to get off, make breakfast, and get ready for school, get her off to school by like 8:45. And then I try to, at the moment, I'm especially trying to have a little hour to myself and just go for a walk, do some skipping, just try and just get my health. I'm really not actually in the best of health, so I'm trying to get that better. But if I looked at today, for example, today looks like quite a calm day, but I realised that I didn't do a thing last night because I was so exhausted. So today I'm chatting to you, and then I have apparently a parcel arriving soon. And then at 11 o'clock I'm going to have a meeting with the PPL, and then I have a physio meeting, and then I'm going to call later a guy from a company called Certo, who are a digital identity blockchain solution. And then later after that, I've got a Mimu catch-up call. And then at 7, I need to... Scout's dad is with her today, so I'm not picking her up. So Tuesday, Wednesdays, that happens. And then I have to do some judging for an AI song contest. And then I hopefully will maybe get back into this lovely song that I started making when I had a day off the other day. But it's really like snatches of time I get to make music, which is, it is upsetting me at the moment because I feel, especially since lockdown, I've just really needed to be able to write more, and I haven't managed it, and it's taking a toll.
What really gives me heart, Imogen, is the fact that despite hearing what you just said, you know, and I've often felt like that too. But it's like at the end of it, there is so much of this great work. You know, it's like a lot has been achieved. You've done so much and it's beautiful.
It is. Imogen, do you feel like you're more productive since having your daughter?
Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. Definitely able to complete tasks quicker and more focused. I just don't have the luxury anymore of having hours of time to, you know, debate basically myself and be like, well, I'm not sure if that's good enough, or, you know, I just, and actually that's a great relief because so much of my time was spent on maybe going a bit too far, you know, and just not needing to go quite so far. Don't think my work has got has lost any quality. It's just the noise in my head has gone down because it hasn't been able to surface. However, on the flip side, because it's so intense all the time with, you know, either there's work going on, meetings happening, or I am trying to do a commission. Like I have done a commission. I've done a few things over lockdown. Thankfully, I did get some work. But when I'm on my own, I go into this like, I don't know, I'm like in shock or something. I'm just like, oh, I've got time to myself, you know, where I do have things to do, mm-hmm. but maybe they're not immediate. They're not like a call or a thing, a deadline. And that space actually is
quiet.
Yeah, but it's also quite a scary space. It's like I don't know what to do. You know, how do I do this? And I end up procrastinating and I just don't know how to deal with that because it's such a big shift.
What you're saying is really resonating with me on a very personal level. It's that internal sort of inner monologue of an artist, that kind of self-doubt and wanting to make the most of your precious time that you have to kind of create something amazing. And then the pressure of that is just so full on. And yeah. then that juggle of having to sort of switch off that part of your brain and go back into parenting mode. And I think that, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people listening to this podcast have the same experience, whatever industry they're working in. You know, it's that constant juggle, isn't it? But I have to say, you are doing a phenomenal job, and your work is, you know, it speaks for itself. It's an inspiration.
I actually also just want to say that you were the first person from whom I heard the words blockchain from about something like 8 years ago. And it sort of just makes us think that you're someone who's really quite ahead of the curve. So I'd like to maybe get a bit of an insight into where you believe the music tech world is heading towards.
Sure, yeah. Well, where I hope it goes is a plethora of an amazing marketplace of music services that currently can't exist. I hope that there will be the chance for each music maker to define their own ecosystem that works for them. So at the moment, we're kind of crowbarring ourselves into these quite unfriendly situations of distribution or deals that might be on the table. Discovery is very hard. Curation is really lacking. And you put in a lot of money and time at the start to essentially not know if you'll ever get anything back. I think the future will be you put your time, I think it's with anything, not just music, but I believe that you put your time in to stuff that is good. You concentrate and you focus and you research and you get good at stuff. And whatever that is, whether it's music or, you know, you're writing a new paper for something over here, or you're doing something for the environment over here, or you're building a new something over there. With blockchain in mind, that you could create a thing, you'll have an identity, everyone will have their identities, you will have a digital identity, and somehow be able to connect to all of your ideas easily. People will be able to find ideas that you've created, see them, you know, on a timeline, kind of in inverted commas. You'll be able to see that you made that idea back then, and people will be able to invest in your ideas, support your ideas. You know, micro investing. So it could be like £1 here, £1 there. It could be £100 there. It could be £1,000 there. It could be that, you know, I come across a musician who's 13 or 17 and just be like, wow, they are really great. I'm going to give them £1,000 just because I can at the moment. And I just love them. And that's going to mean a huge deal to them. They're going to be able to get, you know, a great guitar, or they're going to be able to buy a new computer or whatever it is. But that's a record of me supporting them back then. And maybe in 5 or 10 years' time, or maybe soon after, this person might become a success. And there are already ways for you to kind of buy into people's ideas and be able to support projects. So in the same way that right now you might support a charity or something, you know, there's no way kind of really, or you might buy shares in a company, but it's quite a long-winded process. And most people who aren't investors, you know, most musicians I know have never done that. But it's a really good thing to do, but it's just not on our radar. But this would be a really easy way to invest. So whether you're a fan of a musician or a fan of an environmentalist or a fan of a politician or whatever it might be, or somebody wants to be the next prime minister, you could give up money to these people, support them, and potentially, if there's an option to receive a share of their future income, to do that peer-to-peer, not through companies, not through organisations, directly supporting people. So I feel that just is going to happen in the future anyway. It's already happening. People are building DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, where they're buying into artworks collectively, or they're supporting the freedom of the press, or whatever they're doing. They're kind of bringing together their resource and their passion and putting their money down to what they believe in and creating that world that they want to exist in. And that's happening now, right now, super fast, and it's amazing. And so that's already a given. That's already going to happen. So when you put that into context, then you can imagine that actually lots of really cool services could kind of start to come up, because people are no longer really worried about, I don't know, not being credited for their ideas. So people maybe aren't so protective, and things get made quicker, things get collaborated on and supported quicker, because there's money out there for people who are interested in certain things, and you'd be able to see what's available to be invested in. So I just think the future is really bright for art or anything with a good idea. And so you will have this kind of peer-to-peer supportive entire kind of world way of dealing with ideas and passion and investing in the future that you want. And for music, yeah, you can see where that's going. But then there's all this kind of, you know, how that would interact with mixed reality and interactive spaces and, you know, the Internet of Things and health and all kinds of things, how you could impact as a musician. I might be really supportive of a few different initiatives. One of them might be my own company or you know, my own kind of invention. Or another thing might be this person next door who's doing some really cool thing with new plastics, or, you know, I don't know, made out of who knows what, not plastic. Creating these new brave ideas, and people might be able to see things like that on something like a creative passport or an identity, to be able to see what you support, what you believe in, so that actually you can really wear on your sleeve, you know, how you are in the world. You know, you don't know, people don't know that about me or you, or what you believe in, what charities you support, what your philosophies are, what, you know, but we could exhibit that if we wanted to. And I think it would create a more open, trusting planet, and good ideas would be supported quickly, ease of collaboration. So I think it's a really very exciting feature for anyone with ideas, whether you're a musician, artist, whatever you are.
Yeah, and I hope it comes sooner rather than later.
It's coming. It's definitely coming. It's already here. I mean, amazing things are happening.
I love the mission statement from the Mycelia website. You know, this beautiful, like, envisaging of the future music industry and just the future for creatives, and this idea of a much more trusting space is just wonderful. I'm definitely very excited about it and very thankful that we have you as someone who's really, you know, who's actually doing something about it, not just talking about it. So hopefully anyone listening to this from our industry can sign up to all the info on the Mycelia website and sign up to the Creative Passport and, yeah, and help all of us to make this thing happen. Thank you so much for listening to The Detail, a podcast by me, Katie Melua.
And me, Polly Scattergood. Thanks, Imogen.
My pleasure.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, it's been lovingly made by me and Katie. The editing, however, has been done by me in my studio. So if you're a fan of this podcast and you'd like to hear more, receive additional content and the odd special treat sent directly from me to you, please head on over to my Patreon page to give your support. The address is patreon.com/PollyScattergood. Thanks so much.